Hi, welcome to Off Script. I'm Zach Lewis.
And I'm Dr. Draper.
Today on the show, we're taking a look at Him. Yeah, new Jordan Peele-produced football horror movie, right? It's not directed by Peele. People seem to think it is. Directed by a man named Justin Tipping. We watched it. We're going to talk about it. Honestly, hot take, not as bad as people are saying. Dude, people have been really harsh on Him, and I really don't think it's as bad as people say. Looking forward to the conversation. We're also going to take a look at A Big, Bold, Beautiful Journey. This is a weird one. This is that Colin Farrell, Margot Robbie, kind of dreamy rom-com where they're like hopping through their past to discover their future together, right? It's a South Korean director. Looking forward to talking about this one. Magical, whimsical, sometimes works, sometimes doesn't. Stick around for the review. We need to talk about some upcoming trailers, namely Disney's new trailer for The Mandalorian and Grogu and The Bride, Maggie Gyllenhaal's first film. We have a trailer for The Bride. Looking forward to talking about it. A lot more something than I thought it was going to be. So stick around for that. Before we get to everything, we talk about the news. Our first story this week, Andy, we got a beat on Martin Scorsese's next movie. And it actually sounds like a good time, implying that it wouldn't have been, but it will be because it's Martin Scorsese. What do you know about this?
So a lot of times we really wish that a director would go into the horror genre, and a lot of times the masters just kind of don't. But it looks like Scorsese is going to be heading that way in What Happens at Night, which is based on a novel starring the great Leo DiCaprio, who they have collaborated for over 20 years now, and also Jennifer Lawrence, which this will be their first time working with Scorsese. It centers around a couple that goes to kind of some far-off country in Europe to adopt a child. They stay at some weird hotel, and then kind of mysterious things start to happen. We don't really know much more outside of that, other than this is like, you know, the big first official announcement of his next movie.
Yeah. Currently, Leonardo DiCaprio can be seen in Paul Thomas Anderson's next movie, One Battle After Another, which is coming to theaters this weekend. We're covering that next week on the pod, so stick around. We're going to talk more about that movie later in the episode. Jennifer Lawrence is going to be in her next film. It's called Die, My Love. It's a Lynn Ramsey feature starring alongside Edward Norton. It's not Edward Norton. It's a kid from Twilight. The Twilight kid. He's
Robert Pattinson.
Twilight. Robert Pattinson. It's not named Edward. Robert Pattinson is going to be in Lynn Ramsey's Die, My Love. And Martin Scorsese was talking about doing this Hawaii movie, maybe, with Emily Blunt and Dwayne Johnson, some kind of crime drama thing. But now, apparently, this is what he wants to do next, which is good stuff, man, because the last couple of Scorsese features that I've really enjoyed have both had this kind of, like, historical lean, and the idea of a couple of characters traveling to this old European hotel full of assumedly some sort of ghosts or eccentric characters that travel from afar, I think will offer a lot of room for like perspective. Like lately in Scorsese's movies, I think those are the things that I like the most. The things that really punch through the screen is the feeling that like his stuff is grounded in such a firm reality, the one we share. And I don't know. I'd be interested to see what comes of that, especially in potentially a horror setting. Hollywood Reporter is mum on the genre. You think it's going to be spooky, Andy? That's Ghost Story movie implies spooky. I think that's what they do say.
Well, he has dipped his toe in Shutter Island. So he's not completely, gone in this area before. And that's not like a spooky kind of jump scare movie, but it's creepy for sure. Definitely check that out. Also starring Leonardo DiCaprio in there and Michelle Williams as well. So yeah, I'm looking forward to this. I hope it happens, because a lot of times Scorsese, you'll hear a number of projects announced, and he's in his 80s, and you never know which one is actually going to get made and get done.
Yeah. This is going to be produced over at Apple, just like his last feature, which means we probably won't get a Blu-ray or a 4K for it, which sucks, just like Killers of the Flower Moon. You seemingly can't buy a physical version of it, thanks to how Apple produces their films. But regardless, they're going to give him a fat budget for it. They like what he's doing. It's good, man. It's good. Like, I remember when we saw Killers and thinking, hey, that may not make its money back. Maybe Apple kind of pulls the reins on them a little bit. But I think they respect the talent, and that rocks. Like, they're very seemingly a very film-first studio, and that rocks. So good on Apple. Good on Marty. Can't wait to see it. We're going to talk about Disney this week, specifically some streaming price hikes. But I think the larger story Disney has been in the news for is worth mentioning here. Do you want to crack open this can of whoop ass, Andy?
As best I can, yeah. Disney has had quite the week for reasons we won't get into too deeply. Last week, they just suspended Jimmy Kimmel from his show. Again, we're not going to talk about why, but he was off for several days. Then yesterday, Monday, they reinstated his show. And this was after the stock tanked like 7%. A bunch of people said they were going to they were canceling their Disney Plus subscriptions for the suspension. And so they hurriedly the backlash turned course. And also they announced in the same day, yesterday we got the new trailer for The Mandalorian and Grogu, which we'll talk about more in a minute. And they announced a number of price hikes, because that's what everyone loves to hear. So to give you some hard numbers, dude. Disney Plus with ads is going from $10 to $12. Disney Plus with no ads, $16 to $19. Disney Plus and the Hulu, and their bundles as well. Disney Plus and Hulu, $11 to $13 with ads. Disney Plus, Hulu, ESPN with ads, $17 to $20, a $3 hike. And then Disney Plus, Hulu, ESPN, no ads, $27 to $30. They very recently launched their ESPN app in August. That's very new as well.
It's so funny that Disney like is able to make so much noise all at the same time. Like for just different reasons entirely. The Kimmel getting pulled and back on because Disney owns ABC. Obviously, they are the company that is directly responsible for many of those decisions. So it's not great. You made a lot of people upset. A lot of people said they were killing their subscriptions and canceling Disney Plus. I've been thinking about canceling Hulu. That might be the thing that pushes me over. I think I'm going to finish Alien next week and then probably kick it, you know, especially with these price hikes coming in, right? Like people already in the last week have been thinking about the idea of how much does Disney actually impact my life? How important are they to me really? Hearing a lot of parents say, obviously they got Bluey. They're not going anywhere. Respect the parents. All right. But for the rest of us who don't really need them, you know, it seems questionable. Then they released the trailer for The Mandalorian and Grogu, which we're going to talk about more in our Trailer Park segment here in between reviews. Stick around for more on The Mandalorian and Grogu, which a lot of people got hot takes on. And then like the day after, by the way, everything we make is getting more expensive. It's so funny. Like you guys couldn't have paced these out at all. Nobody could have put one of these next week or maybe held off on something. Like you have like television emergency, followed by lukewarm trailer, followed by everything's getting more expensive. Like, oh God. In just a span of a few days. Messy. Somebody Disney needs to talk to, man. Somebody should have been able to parse these out better. I know they're a big company. I understand they have a lot of departments, but come on. Like, no, nobody could have put the price hike announcement next week? Or do you guys have something going then already? Like, what? I don't know. It just seems messy. It just seems messy and unorganized to me.
Yeah, it's terrible, terrible timing. It's been a very tumultuous week for them. And then it just announced these huge price hikes. And I remember when Disney Plus first started in like 2020, it was $4 or $5. Like it was dirt cheap. Like you didn't care. You didn't miss it because it was just so little. Now it's like $20, $30 for a good service. I don't believe it.
Yeah, I'm like I said, I'm bailing. I kicked my Disney Plus subscription just a couple months ago before this happened. I like Disney. I grew up on Disney clamshell VHSs, baby. I've seen a lot of those movies. So like, I really do like their library, but I've been a subscriber for a while and I've watched a lot of the films. I don't really have a need right now. I don't know. They're just in a weird place with Disney Plus. It stretches how they make content. I get they got to make more money for it, but like it's weird and it's getting more expensive. So if you subscribe to any of these, consider how valuable that subscription is to you. You know, yeah. Do what you will. One more story this week from the box office. Demon Slayer is like the most successful movie ever. Should we cover this for the podcast? I don't think we should. I don't know anything about it, but. Also, damn, everybody's talking about it.
Yeah, this is huge. Once again, Demon Slayer, it's like the second or third movie in this trilogy. It has a really long title, so I didn't write it down this week. Came in with $17 million this week, but $550 million globally. Like, it's just tearing up. And I saw another figure that's actually higher than that now. So it continues to, I mean, just things that are aimed at the youth, like anime and manga are doing really well in all forms, including the box office. And I think there's one more of these in this trilogy of films. Him, the film we're going to be talking about in just a second, came in second place at $13.5 million, a little bit under expectations, but not too far. Conjuring: Last Rites came in at $12 million, $400 million worldwide.
My God,
I don't believe it. It's just they can't be stopped. They can't be said. Yeah. The ghosts. We're gonna be conjuring for until kingdom come. Like, yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah.
So many of these. The Long Walk, which we reviewed last week, came in at $6.3 million, number four, $31 million worldwide. I think that's gonna hit profit territory after not too long. Rounding out the top five is Downton Abbey, The Final Chapter. I wrote the final, whatever. At $6 million for the weekend, $60 million worldwide. Retirement. Yeah, please, final, just make it stop.
Old activity.
That property has its own fans and it's doing well within expectations there. And I hear it's a crowd pleaser for the people into that thing. And then number six was A Big, Bold, Beautiful Journey, which we'll be talking about in a minute here, at a small $3.5 million. Big, Bold, Beautiful Bomb, people are calling it. $45 million movie, made $3.5 million over the weekend. Pretty rough. I thought that this didn't look good from the trailer, and it has a September release. I was like, that's where you dump stuff you don't know what to do with.
Yeah, I put a lot of faith in Big, Bold, Beautiful Journey just on the back of its stars, Colin Farrell and Margot Robbie, who, by the way, on the poster, invite you to experience A Big, Bold, Beautiful Journey. I was editing the thumbnail this week and was like, wow, it really says on there these two are like part of the creative, like, hey, come see A Big, Bold, Beautiful Journey. And like, I love them both. They're both great. Robbie hasn't been in a film since Barbie. I was really looking for. I was like, you know, maybe it'll be whimsical fun. There's something here with these two great talents, and I do think there's something there. We'll talk about it more in our review. It's a bummer it didn't do better for Sony. Demon Slayer is still crushing it. I'm bummed him didn't do better, but I think reviews really hurt him. If it had premiered to like a 98 on Rotten or something, I think it would have done notably better. People just didn't really turn out for it. And I think word of mouth is what really hurt that movie overall. That's the hot week at the box office. What do you think? What are your takeaways?
Well, it's interesting. We've talked a lot about the decline of the movie star, and this is kind of an example of that, because you see Margot Robbie go from the $1.3 billion of Barbie, $1 billion, to a $3.5 million weekend. And it's, you know, Barbie was successful as it was because of Robbie, but also star power isn't what it once was 10, 20, 30 years ago, where it used to be like you could just put stars in a mediocre movie and you could still plan to make money. And now, like, you have two really of the biggest stars working today, and you got a bomb. And then the biggest movie is a kid's anime series film. You know, very recent and from Japan. So
yeah,
it's just wild times.
The rest of the culture is just totally not tapped into. That's what's crazy about that movie doing so good, man. Like, that's a chunk of consumers that, like, we just don't normally see turning out at the movies. Like, people just coming out in droves for Demon Slayer. And it's like, how do you get those people out every... Imagine if you get those people out every weekend. Imagine if Disney could mobilize that audience week over week. Like, imagine the powerhouse, you know? Like, just a lot of people out there that want to see different stuff. And it's a bummer that things like Big, Bold, Beautiful Journey don't break out. Anyway, we should talk about our first film of the episode, I think. I spent plenty of time on news. Let's get down to it. I'm really looking forward to talking about this one. I am. I think there's something here that's not too shabby, but Andy's going to take the summary on it. Andy, please take it away.
Him. So this is the latest film from director Justin Tipping, produced by Jordan Peele and his Monkey Paw Productions. His name is all over this, and it had a lot of strange reactions online, a lot of really fairly negative reviews. And I said, I'm interested in this. Let me go in with an open mind and see how this is. And I was actually really pleasantly surprised. This stars Marlon Wayans and newcomer Tyreek Withers. Withers is an up-and-coming quarterback. He's just finished his college season. He's looking to go into the league. He's like the hottest thing. He's going to be a star. He's going to be one of the greats. He's, you know, gonna going to go big. And then he suffers a kind of devastating head injury just before the combine and then throws his career in doubt. We don't know if he's going to be able to play. He then gets a mysterious call from the estate of Isaiah White, played by Marlon Wayans, who is a Hall of Famer football player. He's got 8 Super Bowl titles. He's a legend of the sport, one of the best to ever do it. And so he gets flown out to his compound, and things get really strange. It's he's told, you know, no phone, no outside calls. We're only focusing on football here. And things start to get really strange, really weird. But Cam is just trying to do whatever he can to make the league, to be one of the greats, to just, have this massive career in football, no matter the cost. That's our setup. We got some weirdness. We got some blood and guts because it's a horror movie. Julia Fox is also in here. Lots to talk about. Zach, what'd you think?
So I didn't know exactly what to expect going into him. I'd seen the trailers, but the thing that I think left a big impact, like walking into the theater, was the Rotten Tomato score. Because I just kept seeing on Twitter, 30%, 30%, and people going, how does a Jordan Peele project get something like this? I can't believe Jordan Peele's movie is a bomb. And it's like, hold on, Jordan Peele didn't direct it. People figure that out pretty quickly. But more importantly, yeah, how does Monkey Paw make something that looks so visually distinct, but does not end up coming out greater on the other end for it? And a big part of that's the director, Justin Tipping, who is a talent and I think has a lot working here. But also, mostly, I think it's the script. I think the script is the weakest thing about him, because visually, it's a lot of fun. And, like, conceptually, it's really good. Using, like, the intensity of football and wanting to be the greatest champion against, like, the hazards of, like, concussion and CTE to bring in horror imagery is cool, dude. Like, and they do some great stuff. Marlon Wayans is a lot of fun in it. I really like the first half of this movie. The problem is, it just gets a little chunky in the end. It just goes some places that don't make a lot of sense. In that way, it reminds me of something like, I don't know, Saltburn, right? Like, it reminds me, like, great first half, very visual, big vibes. Somebody said it was like football Suspiria, right? It kind of is. Like, and I don't think that's bad. I think those are the best parts of this movie. So I'm bummed it scored so low. I think a lot of people have just automatically skipped it because they think, oh, it's junk. There's nothing here. That's not true. I think there's a lot going on in him that is good. I think it just has some clunky parts.
Yeah, enjoying cinema is all about managing expectations. And when I walked into this, I was like, this looks like a horror B-movie. And that's exactly what it is. It reminds me a little bit of like something like Opus or The Menu that we've watched before. It's like, you know, a normal setting that then turns sinister later on. And I think maybe Peele's name being attached to this maybe kind of hurt it in a way. Like, people were just expecting like a masterpiece or something more than it is. I really enjoyed it. And when it started, I kept waiting for the bad stuff to show up that everyone was complaining about. I was like, when it started, I was like, oh, I'm enjoying this. I like the look of it. I like the feel. I like the score. I like the visuals. The acting's fine. And I kept waiting for like the really terrible. And I was like, and it never came. But as opposed to something like Highest to Lowest, like I got 20 minutes into that and was like, oh, we are in trouble.
Right.
Oh no, it is over.
You see the flashing hazard lights. Oh God, oh no. Yeah. No, I agree. Like, I think him is very strong in the first half of the movie for sure. I really want to talk about the setting where this movie takes place. It's mostly at this like large compound that Marlon Wayans' character owns. Isaiah White, I believe is his name. He's this like 8-time super quarterback. And he invites Tyreek Withers' character out to our new young gun who wants to be the greatest, wants to be him. He invites him out to train for a week. And like, that's when things start to get strange. Like when they have this like one-on-one kind of training camp, just him and his staff. It's that like chosen protagonist kind of movie, right? Like you bring your character out and you place him somewhere, Suspiria, a little bit of Saltburn. Opus is a great example. Like we just saw recently, or The Menu, you're right. Like those are both perfect. Where you have your like outsider come into this like wonderful, unique place. And I love that this place is just like, one, like weird brutalist desert architecture, like something out of like Dune, right? Or like The Brutalist. And two, like an altar for football. Like they got 2 fields and one of them's indoor and one of them's outdoor. And they got all this training stuff and all the high tech sports tech stuff. And just on the fringes of that, you see all this like occasional weird symbolic imagery, because the team that he wants to be on, that Isaiah White plays for, is the San Antonio Saints,
Saviors.
Right? That Saviors, right. Saviors, and then you start to bring in some religious imagery with that, and you get across every once in a while. And that starts to kind of trickle down, and these themes start to blend together as like our lead begins to have these like visions and like horrific experiences that are either coming from like reality or like in his head because he's concussed.
Right. And I think one of the things that really stood out to me is just the style of this. When it starts, we see young Kamet as like a 5-6-year-old child, and his dad is really pushing him, and they're watching Isaiah White on TV suffer this horrific injury. They're like, his career is open, his leg's broken in half, and his father's like making him watch this, and he's like, this is a man, this is how you sacrifice for greatness. And it's shot so well. I was like, this is shot like an indie film. And there's a lot of style. It goes in and out of like, it does some x-ray stuff, some infrared things. Like, it's very visually interesting and stylistically interesting, and that's the stuff that I wasn't expecting. Like, I expected it to be a little bit of a B movie, but the style really caught me by surprise. It's one of the things I ended up really liking, and why I think Peele got behind this film, even if it's not the best script ever. I was like, I'm excited to see what Justin Tipping does more, because the style really grabbed me.
Yeah, Tipping has done mostly television work. He did a film in 2016 called Kicks that we did not watch on the podcast, but I think was okay back when it came out. This is the first feature he's directed in a minute. And I did want to talk about this rad x-ray effect they do. Because, yeah, it happens a couple times. Like, when there's a big impact, it'll go to slow-mo and switch to, like, this, like, infrared cam. He talked about it on a podcast while I was researching for before we talked about this. They shot that stuff with a thermal cam alongside their, like real camera. So they could switch between the thermal cam and the real cam in editing. Kind of like the black and white stuff in Dune 2 with Austin Butler when he's, like, outside fighting. And then they overlaid that with, like, a skeleton and like effect CG to make that stuff work. And like, it's so slick looking. They do this other stuff with these like inverted colors and these like skeleton radioactive looking dudes, like a lot of really cool horror imagery and ideas, like big visuals for sure. And like, I like that a lot of that's explained in universe because our character is unreliable. Like our narrator is not the most steady guy. He's got this awesome like cut on his head with these staples going like right down the hairline, which is really sick looking. And the characters are a lot of fun. Yeah. Cam is like kind of quiet and I don't want to, he's not soft per se, but like, inside of him, inside of this great hero who's going to be like the savior of football, right, is a person. And like, Tyreek Withers does a pretty good job of bringing that guy out, at least in the opening of the movie. As things start to get more, the world closes in on him, things start to get weird, he closes off more. But Marlon Wayans is a delight in this movie. He is a lightning rod. Scenes, and he's so much fun in this movie. Like, please get back on it. I know he's talking about doing Scary Movie 6 or whatever. Sick, can't wait to see him. Like, he's great. I love it. Please do more movies. Tim Heidecker is in this movie. Kind of odd. I think he's having fun for what's happening. Same with not Rebecca Fox? Yeah, Rebecca Fox is her name.
Julia Fox.
She's having a good time. She's dressed to the nines. Like, I like the performances, and it's not too big of a cast. Like, so for who's here, like, they're pretty well put together.
Yeah, Wayans is incredible as the mentor figure. And there's this whole idea of passing the torch, because he's like, you know, I've done 8 seasons. I've been, it's about time for me to pass it off. And you're the guy, but you have to be up to the level, and I have to bring you up. And so this is a good time to talk about some of the horror. He brings him in to, you know, to the football thing, and weird things start happening. He starts having like visions and nightmares, and he can't see, you know, what is real and what isn't. And there's a great scene where you know, he's doing football drills, throwing drills, and they make a guy stand in front of one of those automatic things where you drop the football in and shoots it out, and he just takes football in the face just continually. And it's one of these, like, it's adding pressure, and it eventually gets really gruesome. And there's several moments like that throughout the film where it just gets more and more gruesome, and you're, you know, it's a Faustian tale. It's like, how much, what are you willing to sacrifice to be great? You know, I was just listening to a podcast over the Prestige, Christopher Nolan's film. And there's a great part where Tesla says to him, have you considered the cost? And he's like, oh, cost is an issue. No, have you considered the cost? Like, not just money, other things. Like, what are you willing to sell? Are you willing to sell your soul and more for this? So that it gets weird. I think maybe that's where some people checked out, because, you know, it's a weird horror movie, and I think maybe people just weren't expecting that. But it's exactly what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I think things get a little wacky towards Act 3, for sure. Things start to spin a little out of control. But yeah, looking at the trailer and some of the wacky things we see in there, I kind of expected that. I figured it was going to get wacky, you know what I mean? Like, it starts grounded, and then things become unglued, like, as the future goes on. As far as problems go, I'd say that, right? Like, it just gets a little too messy, like, in the back half for a lot of folks. And you start to lose a little bit of reality as Cam really starts to slip, like, as his mind starts to turn. Like, you really start to lose track of what's real and what isn't, which can be frustrating. Additionally, it's not... I was talking to somebody else about this. It's not scary. It doesn't often go for scares. If anything, it's surprisingly funny. Like, with Marlon Wayans and Tim Heidecker in the cast, like, you can expect some decent throwaway gags, and, like, they're in there. And it's not a particularly frightening film. It's definitely using a lot of horror imagery, for sure. It's tense in moments, but, like, I don't think there's any, like, real jump scares. I don't recall ever being, like, jolted out of my seat or anything. But I do recall thinking, man, that's a cool sequence. That's a sick montage. That's a great idea. That's a good needle drop. Like, I just feel like when I watched him, I saw a lot of good things and things that I liked in it. And maybe that's just because I had figured it was going to be bad. But, like, I don't know. I thought it was what it was advertised on the box. I thought it was a fine, serviceable feature. I liked it.
Yeah. And it was actually, I mean, for me, it was a lot better than I'd anticipated after those really early reviews. And this is a good time to remember that it's important to form your own opinion. There's so many people that review things that are paid, that are being nice for access, that are doing things for attention. And that's why I've started to trust early reviews less and less. And like, wait till a movie is actually out, released, real people have seen it. Like, the weekend after it's out is usually when you can get some real things. Especially, we're starting to be able to catch when people are like desperately trying to get quoted on the poster of the movie, because they just have their reviews that don't sound real. But yeah, it was exactly what I thought. It could, like, I think one of the things that Suspiria does really well is that, you know, from the beginning, it's a coven of witches in this setting. And I think we could have been given away kind of the big climax, could have been teased a little bit more earlier. Like, the script could be better, but I think the style, the acting, the direction is really promising.
Yeah, I would be interested to see this crew make another movie, like, for sure. I think there's enough here that works. Like, we've seen some real snoozers.
I've seen
in the
worse movies
department
this month.
yeah. Like, we've seen some real snoozers in horror. Like, I think this is solid. Like, I don't think this is a miss for Jordan Peele or Monkey Paw at all. I don't think anybody should look at it that way. If anything, I hope time is more kind to this movie than initial reviews have been. I think people are maybe just overexcited. Also, a lot of good music in this movie. Added like 5 tracks to the workout playlist. A lot of good music in Him. So you can go check that out for free. You can hit that on Spotify right now. But Andy, would you recommend Him?
Yeah, I absolutely would. This was a pleasant surprise. I enjoyed it a lot. Interesting premise, good performances. People always complain about original films and they don't go and see the original films. But it's a nice horror B movie. A lot of real interesting style. That's what really caught me by surprise, and I really enjoyed. So if you're a little unsure or on the fence, save it for streaming.
Yeah, I'd recommend it as well. I think it's a lot of fun. I think it's good performances, big style, big action, big class, big music. Like, I think it's better than people give it credit for. I think a lot of people saw early reviews and thought, it's not that good. Nah, dude, it's pretty solid. Little wacky in the end. Things get a little weird towards the end of Him. But outside of that, it's a real good time. Marlon Wayans rocks. Go see him. We should talk about some upcoming trailers. So what do we call this segment, Andy?
It's time for the trailer park. So we have 3 trailers for you today, and the first is Anaconda, which is a remake of the 1997 movie of the same name. That was a big blockbuster hit starring Jennifer Lopez and Ice Cube and John Voight. I remember seeing that in theaters. That was a big, and that story is a bunch of people go to the Amazon looking for treasure. They got to fight a giant snake. It's eating everyone. It's a little bit like Jaws in the Jungle. And this is a kind of a meta remake in that this stars Paul Rudd and Jack Black. And the very first thing is, hey, we're going to remake Anaconda. And they are two friends who love that 1997 movie. And they're like, we are going to go to the jungle and remake that ourselves. And so they head down there. They have a kind of a fake snake or a pet snake which they lose instantly, and then a real snake shows up, and they get to then live Anaconda. It's Jack Black in the jungle. It's a Christmas release. It looks very safe. I'm not too interested in it, but it'll probably be a hit, honestly.
It's funny, when I saw the shape of this, the first thing I didn't think was like the old Anaconda. I thought about Tropic Thunder. And then you pointed out, it's Jack Black in the jungle. It's Jumanji. And I was like, oh God, he's done this to us a few times, hasn't he? Yeah, it's like Jack Black running around the jungle, making some kind of feature, right? That's what's going on in Anaconda, of course. Dude, it looks like a total snooze fest. It looks like a pass. I was more interested in something like Cocaine Bear, because at least it seemed like goofy and original. It just seems like, I don't know, like, yeah, you're taking, it's like movie by AI. You take the best parts of a few different properties, and we want to make an Anaconda movie. Boom. Yeah, we think this will make 30 million. You know, perfect. Green light it. Awesome. Have Paul out to set on Monday.
Movie,
you know?
Slop.
Yeah.
Holiday slop.
Movie slop. Yeah, holiday slop's not bad. Remember that for the thumbnail for Anaconda when we're reviewing it. Holiday slop.
Perfect.
Yeah, Anaconda looks fine. Speaking of slop, we got to talk about the trailer for The Mandalorian and Grogu. It was hotly anticipated, and I'm honored to be able to talk about it here on the podcast. We have been talking about this for a long time. Yes, Disney made The Mandalorian Season 1 in 2019. It premiered on Disney Plus. After that, they made a couple more seasons from its runaway success with Pedro Pascal as the lead, The Mandalorian. And, of course, this little wonderful green Yoda-like baby character named Grogu. You probably know who that is. I shouldn't have to explain it here on a podcast. Regardless, after three seasons, things cooled off. The Mandalorian appeared again in the Book of Boba Fett, I think the show. And since then, It's been quiet. I know. Maybe one season I didn't watch it. It's been quiet. But now we have a new Star Wars film out. Not a season of the show, not an episode, not a miniseries, not a holiday special, a real proper film coming to theaters May 22nd, 2026. Star Wars, The Mandalorian and Grogu, picking up with the continued adventures of Pedro Pascal and his little green friend. Man, they had shot this movie and we thought, what are they even going to do with that? That seems so out of touch. They don't know what they're doing with Star Wars. And now the trailer's out and it just seems like a lot of people agree with that. But Andy, what do you think? Oh shit, I didn't even say what's in the trailer. I mean, not a lot. It's basically a teaser. The Mandalorian and Grogu are running around doing stuff. Sigourney Weaver's in there. You see an AT-AT fall off a cliff. It looks very mid, very mediocre. Very mediocre picture. What do you think, Andy?
The Mid-DeLorean.
The Mid-DeLorean. Yeah, the Mid-DeLorean. That's good. That's, oh, dude. Bangers tonight. Yes.
Workshopping on the fly.
Yes.
I think this looks fine. It looks very average, which I think is a problem for Star Wars. The very opening shot, I was like, is that shot finished? It doesn't look very good yet. I think they're trying to distract from some of their other political issues right now, Disney is. So this started life as it was going to be a fourth season of The Mandalorian, and they decided to then just make that into a movie, which they did with something like Moana. Moana 2 was going to be a Disney Plus show, turned into a very successful film. So this same thing kind of happened. It looks fine. You got our two people, but it's weird because The Mandalorian was just supposed to be about him, and then they introduced Baby Yoda, and Baby Yoda was so popular he became a staple of the show, and now he's in the movie, and he's being a kind of extra annoying in the footage, and he's getting very close to Jar Jar Binks territory of we got to up the cuteness and all this. We don't get any sense of what's actually happening. They're just like, they're in the ship. They're talking with a guy. They're shooting lasers.
No
it
plot.
Looks fine.
It's really like a teaser. Yeah, it's more a teaser than a trailer, and they probably should have titled it that. Yeah, it looks fine.
It looks fine. I mean, we'll see. I'm sure it's out late May. School's out. Take the family. Take the kids. It just feels so late. I pointed this out earlier on in our group chat that you know, the Mandalorian was really hot in like 2019, 2020. That's when those first two seasons came out, less than a year apart. And then it took 2.5 years, almost 3 years for season three to come out. And now we're 3 years past that. So we're really like 5 to 6 years removed from when the show was really popular and people were really into it. And now I think it's just forgotten. We've seen that Disney has lost its Star Wars audience. The young kids, they don't care about grandpa's IP. The people that grew up with it, Gen X and older, kind of hates everything that Disney does with Star Wars. They hate Star Wars in general. So I don't know how this is going to do. Maybe it's because it's a summer blockbuster, it'll do fine, but I think it's in trouble.
It's tough. It doesn't look like a proper Star Wars film. I know people have been saying that. It looks like an episode of a TV show. It does. It's probably how they filmed it, right? They probably used the same exact processes, the volume. Like, I'm sure it is much like how you shoot the TV show is how you do the film. Moana 2 is a great example. Moana 2 is supposed to be a series. They pivoted and made it a movie. It made $1 billion. Like, it is a layup of an idea why they would do it this way. It's funny because I used to joke about whether or not it was Pedro Pascal in the suit, but I figured for the film, well, it'll probably be him. Actually watching, I was like, no, it's probably exactly how they shot the show. There's an extra that's probably not even him for most of it. He does voiceover at the end. It's cheaper, right? And Grogu is not, I don't think Grogu's quite in Jar Jar Binks status, but I hear what you're saying, dude. Like, looking at this opening, one of the opening frames from the trailer here of the two of them, like the Mandalorian and Grogu, like peering over a sand dune in the volume with even lighting. They're like Turner and Hooch, right? It's like your buddy cop movie. You got your straight arrow, like the guy who knows what he's doing is on it, the killer, and you got the goofy, affable dog. Except the dog can use the force and looks like a cute baby stuffed animal. And like, I feel like a cynic when I say this stuff. Like, I liked Star Wars for a long time. I think I do still like the idea of Star Wars. But this is just a bummer, you know? Like, I guess when they were making a new Star Wars movie, it's been a few years. I really figured this was going to be something cool. They put it out with this, like, cheeky nostalgia comic book shop
50s pro poster, 50s
sci-fi look on it with, like, you know, danger around every corner. It looks a lot like the Strange
Danger
World
Will Robinson.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. Lost in Space, like this nostalgic kind of thing. And it just looks cheap and it just looks like you guys are phoning it in. And on the one hand, I do think it's worth winding down. No, I'll just leave it there. It looks cheap. That's what I think. It looks cheap. What do you think? You think it looks cheap? We got to move on.
I've seen people comment it looks like a movie made to sell plush toys of Baby Yoda. You either die Baby Yoda or you live long enough to become Jar Jar Binks. That's what I'll say.
It's great.
About that. I think it's in trouble. I think it's in real trouble.
May 22nd, 2026.
Moving on, a new trailer that dropped just this afternoon for The Bride. This is a new, yet another Frankenstein story from director and writer Maggie Gyllenhaal, based on the novel by Mary Shelley. This stars the great Jesse Buckley as the bride and Christian Bale as Frankenstein's monster. And they are in some sort of couple. This trailer has so much style and so much sauce. I've watched it a couple of times. It looks really cool. We don't really know much other than they're like a couple and they're running around. They're beating up people. They're running. But it's got a little bit of that Poor Things look. Jessie Buckley is like unrecognizable. And she always kind of gets in a lot of these kind of girlfriend or mom roles. And so this is a complete kind of different thing for her. And I'm really excited to see what she does. I'm really stoked for this. This comes out in the spring.
Yeah, I'm really pleased to be eating my words on The Bride because, you know, from a long shot, it just didn't look very good in production. It was like, okay, it's Maggie Gyllenhaal's first movie. Christian Bale, like, we got set photos of Christian Bale running around this goofy Frankenstein getup. It's like, okay, I don't know. Like, Buckley's got weird hair. And then the trailer comes out and it's like, oh. Ooh, yeah, like, whoa, this looks like Guillermo del Toro. This looks like that, what, like a David, like a Brandon Cronenberg feature. Not quite David. Yeah, this looks grimy and weird and big, bold lighting, like very artistically confident, like, and that's exciting. So I'm looking forward to The Bride. Yeah, I don't know. It looks weird for sure. People are saying what it's like Bonnie and Clyde and Frankenstein, right? Like, like The Bride and Frankenstein run around, got guns. Like, I don't know what they're gonna be doing, but it looks interesting. Looking forward to seeing more. This is not. I must be confusing this with something else. This is not a musical, right? There's no world that this is a musical. I don't think it is either. I must be confusing it with something. Some other Frankenstein, something I'd read about a couple months ago. But yeah, The Bride. We don't know when this is coming out, do we?
March 6th.
March 6th. All right.
So this was originally supposed to come out in November of this year, and it was part of a kind of competing biopics or Frankenstein features. We have Guillermo del Toro's at the end of October, and then this was supposed to come out in November and ended up getting pushed. Probably a good thing to have these a little bit separated, but this just looks so much better than his movie. And unfortunately, the del Toro version has not been positively reviewed coming out of the festivals. We're still going to watch it and enjoy it, have a good time here. But this, I was like, this is a Hollywood movie. That's a straight for streaming kind of joint. So it's interesting. See this Christian Bale doing a weird voice. He loves to do a strange little voice. He's a little bit like Tom Hardy that way.
He's a little change freak.
Of, yeah, change of an accent here, and he's got the character design is really cool. He's got these big staples in it in his forehead because he's the Frankenstein monster. I don't really know what this is about. Yeah, I'm interested to see what like the plot is of this.
Yeah, it's like got weird fonts in the title cards. It's like, all right, okay, yeah, there's something happening here. This looks like some energy, so we'll see. We got one more movie to talk about on the podcast. Speaking of odd energy, looking forward to taking the summary on this. The movie is A Big Bold Beautiful Journey. So, A Big Bold Beautiful Journey is a story of David and Sarah, two 30-something, 40-something singles who meet at a wedding one night. They kind of hit it off. Things don't really work out. And then on the way home from the wedding, they end up going on this kind of wild misadventure of stepping into their past and other times and places and experiencing, you know, their past and the world around them from a different new perspective with each other and hopefully finding a future together. It's a bit of a rom-com. It's very dreamlike. It's kind of a ghost of girlfriend's past. It's a little like, I don't know, a Christmas story. It's, you know, kind of going into new places. And all of this is possible because of where the script comes from for Big Bold Beautiful Journey. It's a funny place. This is a Blacklist script that came from a writer named Seth Rice, who wrote The Menu just a few years ago. And the script Blacklist is this infamous thing in Hollywood where, yeah, these like scripts that never get produced but are supposed to be incredible end up on this big list of like, hey, this could be a real banger. That's where this script comes from. I thought it was a book because the premise is so imaginative, but it's not. It's just a script. It's just a movie script. That's where this comes from. And its director is from South Korea, a director named Koganada, who is notably done After Yang in 2021 with Colin Farrell. He plays a father who's trying to fix this young like android boy and his family, and also did a few episodes of Pachinko over on Apple TV Plus, or HBO, I think, which was a really successful television show. This is their new feature. Also worth mentioning, along with Colin Farrell and Margot Robbie in our leads, we have a soundtrack by Joe Hisashi, who is the longtime Studio Ghibli and Miyazaki composer. You can hear it right in the soundtrack right away. It sounds like a Ghibli film, which is really odd and mystical and unique. I really like, I don't know, how lofty this movie aims to be, how magical it wants to be. But its biggest criticism, I think, is that ultimately the trick doesn't work. You don't end up being swept away on a big, bold, beautiful journey. The emotion sticks sometimes. And for the right audience, I think it'll mean more. But ultimately, the magic trick doesn't quite satisfy. I think that's kind of the thing that doesn't work about this movie. Andy, what do you think of A Big, Bold, Beautiful Journey?
Yeah, it's a man's reach exceeds his grasp situation where it's going for it. It just kind of doesn't get there. Our characters pull up to, or Colin Farrell, he rents a car and they insist on getting the GPS, and the GPS is a little bit too insightful. Our characters have a 21st century meet cute at a wedding where our characters are just a little unbelievable. Colin Farrell is fine, but they wrote Margot Robbie as this manic pixie dream girl, and I was like, I thought we retired that trope long ago, but she talks in a way that no one talks. She swears a lot for no reason. She dresses really weird, like a hippie, and it's like they're trying to make her weird for the sake of being weird. These flashbacks, they're fun in theory, but they just don't work. It's just a very poor attempt at surrealism. It was like Baby's first surrealist movie. I just was reminded of much better things, like of course Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind is probably the high water mark. Being John Malkovich, or more recently Jesse Buckley was in, I'm thinking of Vending Things. There are movies that if you're going to get weird, you got to get really weird. This is just such a soft attempt. Like if you were if you wanted to explain surrealist film to like high schoolers, I would show them this because it's very easy to grasp.
Yeah, I think I agree. Let me talk a little bit more specifically about how we enter and exit these like worlds that they're going to, because that's kind of our visual like reality that we're moving through over the course of the film. Yeah, so our two characters set out on the road after another chance meeting at a Burger King, very prominently Burger King in this movie. Must have an awesome advertising deal with them. And the two meet at a Burger King. Well, hold on, let me wind it back one further. After meeting at the hotel, they don't really end up having a connection. Colin Farrell's driving back in the rain, and his GPS asks him, Colin, do you want to go on a big, bold, beautiful journey? And he says, yes. He has to like say this thing out loud, like affirm this journey. And he says, okay, great. First things first, hit the next exit and get a cheeseburger, right? Cool. So he does, right? What better way to start an odd road trip? So he stops off at a Burger King, and there he sees Sarah sitting across the way. The two of them meet, they start talking, they have kind of this funny little conversation. Her car that she also got from the car rental agency, this very funny, surrealist agency run by Phoebe Waller-Bridge and Kevin Kline in his first film in like 4 years. It was a delight seeing him on screen again. She comes with, she hops in her car, they take off, and the car says, hey, you guys are headed to your next stop on your journey, pull off in this field over here. They pull off and there's this big red door and they walk over to it. What's this do? It's a door standing in the middle of a field, right? That Joe Hisaishi soundtrack kind of creeps in. And so they open the door and they go through it, and then it cuts to the other side of the door and we're in a room inside. I don't remember where the first door goes. It's not high school. That's the second one. I couldn't tell you.
The lighthouse.
That's right. They're at a lighthouse. And Colin Farrell says, I've been to this lighthouse before. I traveled here once for work. And I remember looking out over the sea and feeling nothing because I was traveling alone and I'm lonely. And she's like, well, that should mean more. And then they hop back in the car and we keep driving. What was that about? I don't know. That was strange. And they come across another door out in a field and it goes to high school, where Colin Farrell has to be the 15 again and the lead in his band, and this girl that he liked, he's about to lose her forever. And if he doesn't say the right thing and he has to relive this challenging moment, Robbie's there to kind of comment on it. We keep doing these doors. We go to a hospital where we see Robbie's mom on her deathbed, Sarah's mom. We go to a past home where we step into like them meeting, Colin Farrell's character meets his father. Like, we start to step through all of these times and past in the past where you're like looking back on your perspective, and the big, bold, beautiful journey is you like going through these things. It's an art museum. And like, I think the general framework of that is really good. Like, overall, I think that's solid. I actually really like the practical effects of the doors. Very simple. You walk in a door in a field, cut to door in high school, and the actors are closing the door. No CGI, no stupid portal garbage. Like, real easy, one-to-one, very about time. I know I said Ghost of Girlfriend's Past already. But the magic doesn't work that good. Like, it's all these different perspectives on these two fictional characters' lives. Oh, when I was in high school, when I was alone at a lighthouse, when I was alone at a hospital. And like, it doesn't really skewer any one person in particular. It's trying to just be this net of like humanity for everyone. And between Farrell and Robbie, I just don't think they can save it. Like, the script's a little too wide in its themes.
Yeah, our characters, when they first meet, like, again, they have this, it's like an anti-meet-cute where they meet, and they're clearly very interested in each other. But she's like, well, we shouldn't do this, like, because I'm a wreck. I'm only going to hurt you. And he's like, well, I'll abandon you first. And it's like a little bit too smart for itself. Like, it's like, no one talks like that. Just have a regular meet-cute. And yeah, they go through these different areas of their lives where they were struggling, and they're both supposed to kind of overcome their avoidancy. You know, I'm not good enough for you because of XYZ, and same thing. You know, we have a kind of a showdown with past relationships. And just none of it works. Like, none of it is dramatic enough. The drama doesn't work. You know, like they do, yeah, some teenage, like being heartbroken and stuff. And it's just like, it just doesn't pull you in. And I'm trying to think of movies that where people go back into the past and do this thing, and nothing's coming to mind. But I was like, this has been done so much better in other ways, and it just doesn't work. It doesn't pull you in. You're not convinced by any of it. You don't feel bad for our characters at any point.
No, I'm going to go the other way. It works sometimes. It definitely does not all work. Probably most of it doesn't work. There were a couple of bits that tugged at my heartstrings. So there's some stuff with him and his dad that I thought was really sweet as a son. Like, I guess a lot of dudes are sons, actually. Most of them are. But yeah, like, I thought that was nice. The stuff with Robbie's mom I thought was kind of heartfelt. Like, their connection does not work that good because there's also supposed to be a romance here, and the two of them just do not quite click together in the right way. They're kind of opposites. But I really like a lot of the practical stuff. While it is like film school surrealism, at the same time, it's low budget surrealism, right? Daniels does low budget surrealism. Julio Torres and Problemista does low budget surrealism. I like a lot of that stuff. And there's some really great blocking. There's this one cafe scene where they each sit on opposite sides of the cafe at two single tables with their former partners and argue about why they broke up. And as the scene goes on, they keep cutting closer and closer together in tables till they're all sitting at the same table. And it's just real tight and put together good. And like, that's one of the scenes that works real good in this movie. Like, that's where I think Koganada's really got something special here. But alternatively, like, there's a lot of stuff that's chunky and could use some fat trimming and a script that's just not quite tight enough. And like, it just doesn't, I don't know. Like, it needed some screws turned to. It needed a couple reshoots and maybe something to tighten up in editing. I like the lo-fi-ness of it. I like the lo-fi-ness of their GPS. It's like this like super basic, like one screen thing. Almost looks like an old Game Boy or something. And I didn't mind that it was like not overly imaginative. And I really like the road trip, honestly, between the stops. Because ultimately what I think is happening here is they're just talking on the road as they travel together and talking about their past and like kind of visualizing them themselves. But it just doesn't quite mixed together to be the magic sauce to make it work, like to make you like tear jerking in your seat or anything. You know what I mean? It's a bummer. It's close to it. It's really close.
It reminded me, strangely enough, of Bo is Afraid, because yeah. Bo is Afraid is such wild surrealism. Like that first like 45 minutes of that film are crazy, and then it only gets more crazy as his journey. He goes on a journey as well, and that's definitely not everyone's cup of tea, but at least Ari Aster is going for it. Like, you will never see anything. I'm scarred by some of what I see I've seen in Bo is Afraid, but it stuck with me for years because it is so crazy and so out there. And this is just so forgettable. And also, strangely, this could very well be like family cinema. If you didn't have Margot Robbie dropping the F-bomb every like 2 seconds, I don't know why. Like, it's a very PG movie, and then they gave her some very like rated R dialogue, and that again, that hurts the film's box office, because that if it's R, then you have a harder time getting younger people to it. So that was a really strange choice too.
Yeah, I forgot about that. We talked about it before the show, and I said you should definitely mention that, because yeah, that's worth bringing up. Phoebe Waller-Bridge does the same thing. She drops like 4 F-bombs in the opening scene, and I was like, oh, okay, I guess this is an R-rated feature for some reason. Then it has no good reason to be one. It's really strange.
Yeah, there's no violence, no sex, no, you know, nudity, no, nothing heavy. It like I said, everything else is PG except the dialogue.
Something
by
yes.
One character most of the time.
Something totally unrelated to Bird Walk out of this review for a brief moment. I'll close this off, I promise. I just watched Conclave again the other day. Conclave's on Prime Video. And when I paused it, it says at the top the rating. Conclave's rated PG. For like mild thematic elements and smoking. And I was like, it's such a mature drama, but there's no violence. Nobody curses. It's a solid feature. Like, this should have that problem. Like, this might as well be a PG feature. Like, there's not a whole lot going on here to make it an R rating. It just kind of is. And it's like, you could have almost edited out the bits to make them not R rated. Like, it's really strange. I don't know. I wish it was more than the sum of its parts. I worry the parts aren't even that good. But for what it's worth, like, I've been a little low lately. I felt my heartstrings tugged a bit by Big, Bold, Beautiful Journey. It's not perfect. It's got a lot of problems. But I think, like a lot of these kind of inspirational road flicks, like Secret Life of Walter Mitty from Ben Stiller, I think it will have an audience. I think there will be people out there who are like, this movie means a lot to me. This spoke to me in a special way. So I don't know. Definitely not for everybody, but for certain people out there who are seeking it, I think you might get something out of this. I think, you know, I think there's something to be gained. And I should probably wrap it up. Are you ready for final recommendations?
Yes. Other than to say, like you said before, the score is really nice. I think visually there's some interesting things. I would love to see a better script with the same director.
Yeah, I think a lot like him, I think there's a lot here that works, not perfect. Andy, would you recommend Big, Bold, Beautiful Journey?
Soft pass. I would say save it for streaming if you're interested. It's visually interesting, but our script is just really weak. Our characters are weak. Margot Robbie and Colin Farrell are doing the best they can. They can't save this movie. They can't save this writing. Like I said, it's it's like my a baby's first surrealist film. There's so many better films that do this sort of thing. So I say soft pass, save it for streaming.
I'm going to go soft, yes. I'm going to say this movie is good if you want something like this. If you're seeking something like a Walter Mitty or like About Time, like it's imaginative and it's bold and it's supposed to bring you up when you're feeling low, right? Like you're depressed and have nowhere to go. You want to watch a movie, throw on Big Bold Beautiful Journey. You might actually get something out of it. You might actually enjoy it. So yeah, not perfect, not bad. Lo-fi in some smart ways. I enjoyed it. But I get it. It's not great. Anyway, we got to wrap up the episode. That's it. Shoot, off script episode 308. What are we watching next week, Andy?
We're going to be watching One Battle After Another. That's the new Paul Thomas Anderson film that's been highly anticipated from Warner Brothers, starring Benicio Del Toro and Leonardo DiCaprio. We're going to see what that's all about. We have IMAX tickets for it this Friday. We're also going to be taking a look at Sorry Baby, which is on Video On Demand, which is a movie that we've heard a lot about. And I've seen it's got some buzz all around on film Twitter. It stars Ava Victor as both director, writer, and starring. And we don't really know much about this. I've avoided a trailer, but we're going to watch that and get back to you. We're also going to be back with our kind of season review of Alien Earth, which wraps up tonight, the finale. So that's going to be exciting too. And maybe catch up with some other TV peacemakers a little over halfway through Gen V. I'm struggling a little bit with Gen V, not because it's bad. I think there's just kind of a little bit too much superhero stuff out. Also, The Strangers Chapter 2 is also releasing this week. I almost forgot all about that.
I saw a trailer for The Strangers Chapter 2 in theaters and was like...
looks terrible.
Yeah, it does not look great. Yeah, it looks a little lo-fi in a way that I think is not going to help them. But if you enjoyed the episode this week, if you like what we're doing here on Offscript, the best way you can support us is just subscribe to the show. Subscribe to the show on your favorite outlet, YouTube. We got a lot of things going on. If you're an audio listener, you like to listen to us on the go, you can check us out on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, iHeartMedia. I guess if you're an audio listener, you already knew that. But if you're watching on video and I'm telling you about it now and you want to listen to us on audio, that's how you can do it. We're in all those places. Leave us a rating and review while you're over there, by the way. Audio listeners out there. Helps a ton. Moves us around in the algorithm like you wouldn't believe. I've been told by top podcast scientists that there's no better way to grow than to have somebody leave a rating and review on your show. So if you could do that for us, it'd mean a lot. I know I said we're on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, all the usual social media places. Come check us out, man. And thanks for listening to Off Script, episode 308. Our website is offscriptfilmreview.com, and you can leave us email correspondence directly at mail@offscriptfilmreview.com. From all of us at Off Script, the home of bold cinema, I'm Zach Lewis.
And I'm Dr. Draper.
Thanks for watching.